Please join me in Leviticus chapter 19 at verse number 33, where we're going to talk first about the Israelis' interaction with immigrants or non-Israeli residents of the land. This is going to, I think, give us some principles that could help us in our current situation here in the United States. There is lots of heat, political heat and emotion going on over the issue of illegal immigration or undocumented residency. And I am going to urge you to kind of tamp down some of your irritation about that situation and listen to the principles given here in Scripture about the about how we're always supposed to think about other people, regardless of what their status is. Everybody is made in the image and likeness of God, and we need to respect that image and likeness. Yes, we do need to apply the law across the board appropriately and fairly. But we need to remember in the midst of that, these folks are still the children of God. Okay? So here comes the teaching from the book of Leviticus. Leviticus 19:33. When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. So we've got a non-Israeli coming and living for a while in the land of Israel. Now, they didn't have, like, passports and things like that, birth certificates. They had a standard by which they judged whether or not a person was an Israeli. Basically, if they did not have an Israeli pedigree, then they must have been a stranger. And so here we have some stranger that comes to live for a while in Israel, and the Israelis are told, don't treat them meanly. Don't take advantage of them. Don't be rude to them. Don't, treat them disrespectfully just because they're not Israeli. Verse 34, you shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, so you think about them like you would think about an Israeli, because it's the idea of another human being. And you shall love him as yourself. We're back to the golden rule here. We are supposed to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. When we are in another country and things are not going swimmingly for us, maybe we find out that our documentation is not in order, which has happened, then we hope that everybody will try to work it out with us to make sure it's okay. So you shall love him as yourself. Why? For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am he who is your God. So we always remember it could happen to me, or something similar could happen to me. And how would I want to be treated? And so always look out for the other person like you'd want to be looked out for. And remember, God is their God. Remember, God keeps throwing that in here. I am he who is your God. These are the rules I'm giving you. This is how I want you to treat other people. This is how I want you to live your life, because I am holy and I expect you to be holy. Verse number 35. You shall do no wrong in judgment, in measures of length or weight or quantity. You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin. Now, earlier in our look in Leviticus, we were seeing that when you go to court, you're supposed to be fair across the board. everybody should get the same level of judgment. If you are prone to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, then you have to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. If you're prone to be like letter of the law type of person, then you have to be letter of the law type person to everybody. In the New Testament, Jesus talks about this idea that we need to measure carefully in our judgments, because by the measure you measure, it will be measured back to you. So we believers, Old Testament, New Testament, doesn't matter. We're all supposed to be fair across the board. And that includes in our commerce measurement. The inch should always be the same inch for everybody. The foot the same way. The same way for weight. The problem that has always popped up in society, and it's being spoken to here in this passage, is that somebody who's a cheater in their heart figures, you know what? I think I'm going to use one measurement for myself and another measurement for the people that are buying from me or from whom I'm buying, because I want everything to be in my favor. And so at this time, they were using weights on a little balance scale to decide the value of things. And so the just balances are supposed to have just weights. And the ephah was a standard of how much fit into a certain basket, certain size basket. A hin was how much liquid would fit into a certain container. And so all of that was supposed to be standardized. Just like when you go to the grocery store now, if you bother to look on that scale that you use to weigh your bananas or weigh your fruits and vegetables, there'll be a little sticker on there that shows that this scale has been approved by the weights and measure standard people. Same thing when you go to the gas station. There, somewhere on the gas pump, there's going to be a little sticker showing that this has been certified, that it uses a standard that is accurate. That's what is being talked about here, is everybody needs to be fair to everybody. No cheating allowed. No putting the thumb on the scale, as one of our sayings is. I am he who is your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And you shall observe all my statutes and all my rules and do them. I am he who is. So a double reminder. I am the Creator God. I'm the God that got you out of slavery. I'm taking you to the promised land, and I expect you to use my standard for everything. And my standard is fair for everyone across the board. And so we believers have to take that same tack. Now, sometimes it is unpleasant. It is distasteful to us, because we have to rule against someone we care about and say, no, you were in the wrong, or no, I'm not going to act as if your measurement has to be better than everybody else's measurement. Everybody's measurement's the same. That feels rough when we have to tell our friends and our family members that. But when our enemy, the person we haven't been getting along with, the person who maybe has even done damage to us, when they come along, we have to give them the right measurement, the right standard. Because they treated us badly is no excuse to mistreat them. It's as simple as that. Jesus says that you shall be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. It's a rephrasing of the holy thing. Just the idea of just like he is correct in the way he treats people, you need to do the same thing. Verse 1 of chapter 20. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, "Say to the people of Israel, any one of the people of Israel or of the strangers who sojourn in Israel, who gives any of his children to Molech, shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones." A few sessions ago, we were talking about Molech. It's a slight variation on the pronunciation of the Hebrew word for king, Melech. And it was an adulterated version of God who destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. The Moabites and the Ammonites who grew up in their ethnic groups after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah had adopted a version of God that needed to be appeased because he was the destroyer king. He was Chemosh Molech. Chemosh meaning destroyer, Molech meaning king. And the way that you appeased him was that you would have this party, probably on the anniversary of the destruction, and you'd get drunk, and you'd have sexual relations, and any babies born from that sexual activity were earmarked as sacrifices to Chemosh Molech, to the destroyer god, the destroyer king. And they were sacrificed the next cycle around. And then we have found out archaeologically that they took those little charred bodies and stuffed them in jars, clay jars, and buried them next to houses or special places as little good luck tokens. It's a sick, sick thing. And it's a twisted response to the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so, over time, that cult became popular around the lower Middle East. And the Israelis are being warned, when you go into the land, if anyone, Israeli or non-Israeli resident, burns up their children to Molech in one of those ceremonies, that's an automatic death penalty. He gets stoned by the witnesses who saw him do it. And then verse 3, God says, "I myself will set my face against that man and will cut him off from among his people because he's given one of his children to Molech to make my sanctuary unclean and to profane my holy name." See, God knows and testifies that the Molech cult is an abominable representation of what happened at Sodom and Gomorrah. And he is not going to put up with that. The people who engage in it will be cut off. And apparently, God doesn't say you run them out of town, you actually execute them. Verse 4, "If the people of the land do at all close their eyes to that man when he gives one of his children to Molech and do not put him to death, then I will set my face against that man and against his clan and will cut them off from among their people, him and all who follow him in whoring after Molech." So if the cancer spreads, that is, not only is this guy worshiping Chemosh Molech, the destroyer king, by burning up babies that came into existence from a drunken party 12 months earlier, if the people around him are letting him get away with it, turning a blind eye, then they are complicit as well. And they will either be run out of town, or if they try to stay unrepentant, they will be executed as well, because God is not going to put up with that. Fast forward to northern Israel. When you read the passage that describes why northern Israel was being kicked out of the promised land and being taken away into Assyrian captivity, one of the specific things that God says that the Israelis were engaging in that he was appalled by and needed to bring to an end was the Chemosh Molech cult, the passing the children through the fire. And so even though God gives them clear warning here, they will engage in it anyway later. Verse number 6. If a man turns to mediums and necromancers, remember we just talked about this last session. This is a tapping into the spirit world, using people to reach into that spirit world where the fallen angels exist. It's a very bad, dangerous neighborhood that God tells us that we're not supposed to be in. If you ignore that and go in anyway, this is what he says. I will set my face against that person and I will cut him off from among his people. So again, either they get run out of town or they get executed. Verse 7, consecrate yourselves therefore and be holy, for I am he who is your God. So the reminder verse, the reason God expects this type of behavior out of the Israelis is because it's the standard of God. He wants his children to act like him, to think like him when it comes to these issues. They've had 430 years in Egypt, and they have picked up a lot of bad habits and bad thinking. And God is trying to come against that with his law. Verse 8, keep my statutes and do them. I am he who is, who sanctifies you. For anyone who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood is upon him. Now, when we talked about this before, I said that this is not some sort of, in the heat of the moment, saying something nasty to mom and dad. This is a pattern of behavior over time that eventually culminates in a bridge too far where the person says some sort of horrible curse against mom and or dad. And we know that the Ten Commandments says that children were supposed to obey their father, they're supposed to honor their mother and their father, and so this is a capital crime. Father and mothers are supposed to be representing God to their children. And as long as they're doing that, and the child, and I'm usually thinking in the sense of an older child, what we'd refer to as a juvenile delinquent that's like just gone wild. By that sort of behavior, that sort of disrespect of parents, it's also disrespect for God. It is, for all intents and purposes, treasonous. And treason is a capital crime. Verse number 10. If a man commits adultery with the wife of his neighbor, and it's assumed, I think, in the context here, that they're caught in the act. And this is kind of related then to the John 8 story of the woman caught in adultery. Remember, the leadership says, Rabbi, this woman is an adulteress. She was caught in the very act. Well, little problem with that scenario, where's the guy? If they were caught in the act, how come they've only got the woman here? And so Jesus kind of deals with that issue in his own way. But Here's the background from the Old Testament. If a man commits adultery with the wife of his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. Adultery was a capital crime in the Jewish theocracy. Remember, theocracy means God rule. God is the king of this nation. And so his rule was, it's a capital crime to violate your marital vows. If a man lies with his father's wife, that would be his mom, or at the very least his stepmom, he has uncovered his father's nakedness, both of them shall surely be put to death, their blood is upon them. So what we're finding here is that we're now coming back to some issues we'd seen earlier, where we had a PG-13 day, by the way, and so maybe we should remind everybody of that again here. Here is the penalty for it. It's execution. Caught in the act, messing around with a close relative, execution. Verse 12, if a man lies with his daughter-in-law, again, can we say, ooh, both of them shall surely be put to death. They have committed perversion. Their blood is upon them. And we're actually going to find here that everything that was said in that previous section, and I was trying to remember, let's see which chapter that was. It was chapter 18. We only see certain ones this time, so it's kind of like a recap for the benefit of the whole. It's all capital crime stuff. Verse 13, if a man lies with a male as with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them. So homosexuality is a deviation from the one man, one woman, together for a lifetime design that God made when he made sexuality. And so for the Israeli people living under the theocracy of God, it was a capital crime. Verse number 14. If a man takes a woman and her mother also, and this is talking about at the same time, whether there was paperwork or not, it is depravity. He and they, because apparently it's a cooperative thing, shall be burned with fire, that there may be no depravity among you. Now, the burning with fire here does not, I don't think, and don't hold me to this, because I will try to continue doing some studies to see if I can trace this down. I don't think it's burning at the stake. I actually think that it's a secondary part of the execution, where they are stoned first, and then their bodies are burned. That's what I'm thinking, is that it's a two-stage thing, because of the atrocity of the crime. Verse number 15, if a man lies with an animal, he shall surely be put to death, and you shall kill the animal. If a woman approaches any animal and lies with it, you shall kill the woman and the animal. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them. So bestiality, caught in the act, automatic death penalty. Verse 17, if a man takes his sister, a daughter of his father or a daughter of his mother, sees her nakedness. We're not talking about accidentally. It's not like some sort of situation comedy where, you know, the husband sees his sister-in-law in the shower thinking it was his wife in there. Okay? That's not what we're talking about. Not an accident. This is on purpose. It's sexual relationships. If he sees her nakedness and she sees his nakedness, it is a disgrace, and they shall be cut off in the sight of the children of their people. He has uncovered his sister's nakedness, and he shall bear his iniquity. Now, the execution wording is not used here, but it does seem to imply it, because caught in the act, sexual immorality, execution seems to be the context. Verse 18, if a man lies with a woman, intentionally understand, during her menstrual period and uncovers her nakedness, he has made naked her fountain, and she has uncovered the fountain of her youth, both of them shall be cut off from among their people. Remember, I've explained to you that A lot of these sex sins were prominent, particularly amongst the Canaanites, somewhat amongst the Egyptians, but particularly among the Canaanites. And it's an intentional contact with menstrual blood. They thought there was supernatural power in it. And so God warns the Israelis against that, saying blood is life, and it's only supposed to be used for the sacrifice ceremony. They're talking about arterial blood, menstrual blood, that sort of thing. Anything else is a violation. So if you intentionally have sex during the menstrual cycle because you want to have contact with that blood, that's an executionable offense. Even though the execution wording doesn't appear here blatantly, I think it's implied pretty clear with the idea of they're going to be cut off, and it's in the context where that's happening several other places. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister or your father's sister, that's your aunt, for that is to make naked one's relatives. They shall bear their iniquity. So sexual affairs with your aunt or uncle seem to carry death penalty. If a man lies with his uncle's wife, so that's not a blood relative, but it's a relative by marriage, he has uncovered his uncle's nakedness, they shall bear their sin, they shall die childless. If a man takes his brother's wife, it is impurity, he has uncovered his brother's nakedness, they shall be childless. Now, what does that mean? It's possible that God says, I'll step in and deal with them and cause them to be sterile the rest of their lives. Or it's just the idea that just because they thought they were going to start a relationship together doesn't mean that they're going to be able to have kids from that relationship, because they will be executed before they have a chance to have any kids. And I actually think that's the much more likely understanding. Mark your place. We'll get back into the Word next time.